So we're going to do a few reflections as a group together on our dialogue with the Iraqi students.
Question? Well, we were talking before the microphones came on, and it kind of silenced it a little. But my first comment was, you know, gosh, we're all on the hook now. We kind of have this familiarity with these people over there, and in a sense, our friends, our new friends, now are going to be the faces we see when the bombing happens, and no longer just Saddam Hussein or his soldiers, maybe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree with that. I think that the fact that there was kind of this long period of silence when we originally turned the mics on, I think that that kind of speaks volumes in and of itself. As we just kind of sit here reflecting, you know, on the fact that these people whom we're talking to are going to be in the very near future, very likely in grave, grave, life-threatening danger. And one thing that really amazed me was just throughout all of it, the sense of humor was definitely there.
Yeah, it's nice that we all, like, relay it on the personal level, and just it makes it so much more meaningful that we can build bridges like that. And you think if every American citizen could do this, it would be really hard to declare war. Like, it's not hard to declare war against one man who isn't, like, considered a good man by the American public. But when you think about all the faces and all the people that are going to die, if everyone could have this experience, it would be an easy thing to stop.
I've just kind of been numbed, in a way. You know, like, when you just go through experiences that, you know, you just haven't gone through before. I'm kind of numb right now just because hearing someone just mention, you know, I hope I can be alive to talk to you guys again. How often do you hear that here in the States, you know? And it's absolutely, I don't know, it's overwhelming in a way. And at first I was getting a little frustrated when they constantly, like, it seemed like they were very, getting defensive, and then they started, like, kind of, like, attacking us, and I was getting a little frustrated with that. But then, you know, I think Ramzi did, I mean, he explained it. He's like, you know, these people are scared, mm-hmm. and these people need a voice right now, and they're just saying everything that they want American people to hear them, and it wasn't necessarily related, like, towards us, but they're letting out their frustrations, and just to hear it in their voice, because they're very, like, adamant. They're like, no, well, what about this? Well, where's the proof, or where's this? It was really important to hear that, because I know that I hear a lot of us saying that, well, where's the proof? Why are we going in there? But it's even more important when the people that are actually, you know, going to be on the other side of the gun saying this too.
I was really fortunate that that frustration kind of bubbled up. I think it was totally appropriate, and it's really what we should be feeling, you know, just as a standard. I mean, this, I think it's true that we do have a lot of responsibility, and that there is so much that we could do that, you know, for various reasons, it just, it doesn't happen. And when you really take the weight of it, I mean, just having people over there question you, you know, a single question, you don't know them, you haven't seen their face, but they ask you, and because it's coming from them, it becomes, you know, so powerful, and it brings up such shame and...
Also, just, I mean, for me, it just really drives home and puts it into perspective. I mean, we're over here in this studio. We will all go home today, you know, kind of back to our lives. It's finals week, so, you know, we'll have finals to do and papers to turn in and, you know, homework assignments to grade or finals to grade or essays to grade or whatever. But over there in Iraq, it's not going to be anything like that. I mean, you know, they might be going home. Okay, let's see, I have to stockpile on more food because we're going to get bombed in, you know, the next day, in the next week. We don't know when it's going to happen. So, I mean, it just really put things into perspective for me in just a big kind of profound, profound way. And just kind of building off of what Nico said, I think that One thing that I hope that listeners will take away from this is just that we do have a responsibility to raise awareness about this issue.
When we first started, I was so happy. I was just thinking, wow, I really love these people. I just want to be friends with them forever. I really didn't want the conversation to end. It was so fun talking to them, and it's like so many thoughts. I mean, I'm sure thousands of thoughts run through all of our heads, as they always do. But I was just listening to them, and it was amazing. It's so simple. Just don't kill people. Let them live their life. They don't need advice. It's so simple. All we have to do is put down our weapons. It's so simple. It's every individual realize that there's no reason to stop people from just living their lives. It's overwhelming. It was such an amazing experience for me. I really want to, I really wish that we can keep in touch with them. I don't know, it was just, when we first started, I just felt so much love for them. A real feeling of love for all of them.
It's actually starting, I'm sorry, were you done?
It's
starting, like, it's pissing me off. It seriously is. To know that these people have to go through this, and to think that not more people are mad. And, you know, I know that we're pretty active, and, I mean, obviously if someone's going to listen to this, it seems like they probably are too, but it's just a frustration. It angers me that not more people are paying attention to this, not caring that these are human beings. Mm-hmm. These are like people with legitimate fears that they're going to be bombed, that, you know, say someone's going to school, that they're not going to come to school, their kids are going to be killed, that their parents are going to be killed, or just, you know, suffer from cancer, something horrible, horrible things. And because we've never faced it here. We've never faced it here, so we can't put a face to that. We can't put a face to pain. And it's unfortunate. It's so unfortunate, but it's completely necessary that we do this, because what good is it to us after it's done?
Yeah, I've been struck a lot in the last week or two of the sort of call to remember the Alamo. It's our 20th century version of remember 9/11. Like, somehow people who are against war, well, don't you remember 9/11? Don't you remember the catastrophe that was? And don't we deserve to sort of lash out? And I'm thinking, you know, while I completely disagree with that, I think that's an absolutely erroneous response. It struck me that we're talking to people, I mean, at least the 9/11 disaster happened. It was a surprise. Nobody knew it was coming. And I was struck, as we're talking to these people, they can see the planes coming. They're amassing around their country on all sides. They have been told it's going to happen. They've been told how many bombs are going to be dropped. You think that they don't know? No. So it's, in a lot of ways, it's just got to be multiple times worse. I mean, any call to remember 9/11 as some sort of justification for what we're about to do is just, is almost a joke.
That.
Beyond comprehension.
Yeah, not only that, it's like, look at Afghanistan. Did everyone just forget about that? I mean, Afghanistan, how many more countries do we have to demolish in order to, you know, feel like, you know, we have finally suppressed our anger? That's mm-hmm. ridiculous.
Mm-hmm. Now we're safe.
Yeah.
Pax Americana.
I did love their spirit, though. I mean, you know, they wanted to get into the politics. They wanted to ask us. I mean, they put us on the spot. I was kind of like, oh, my God, you know, what are we doing? We should do more. And then, you know, they could sense the tension and threw in a question about what's the nastiest thing you've ever done. It was kind of like, I think he understood what he asked us, you know. A real camaraderie is what I felt. And yeah. God help us. I hope we can communicate with them again in the coming weeks.
It struck me how they don't have people to vent to,
mm-hmm.
Or an outlet, and how our body language shifted, and mm-hmm. you know, we were all uncomfortable when they were starting to get angry or testy with us. But you know, if any of us need to have an outlet or vent, you know, we have the power of the pen or can call anybody and find that. And how grateful I am that everybody really walked through that process with them and was, you know, present through that, even though it was uncomfortable for me too.
I think the movement here in America has been nonviolent, but one thing it hasn't done is to not cooperate yet. I think there's a lot that can be done nonviolently to disrupt the planning, the mobilization, everything, and he might have been calling for more of that sort of action on the part of the peace movement, because the marches, you know, the expressing opinion, the largest protest manifestation in world history, is not being listened to. So what's the next step? And that step hasn't really been taken in America yet. You know, it's happening in Turkey. They're locking themselves down in the ports where they're unloading the weaponry. Mm-hmm. You know, and I think there's things that can be done in America, and I'm not sure if people have those kind of intentions yet. But I think that might have been something that the Iraqi students, you know, thought might work or might be appropriate now.
I think that that's when we actually should also question the Patriot Act, because I know that this has scared, you know, a lot of activists in general, because we can be seen as terrorists. It's unfortunate that, yeah, it's unfortunate that we have to be threatened to this, or that we have to be scared ourselves of questioning our government. Just like they mentioned, what kind of a democracy is this? It isn't a democracy, not at this point. Not if so many people are opposing what's happening, and it's still happening.
On the non-cooperation front, I was trying to get some more information about this yesterday at the protest, and I would welcome anything that you guys have heard in terms of what actions might be planned for the day that bombings begin or the day after, depending on the timing. I understand that some organizations have been promoting either demonstrations at 5 p.m. or a walkout from work, and I feel like that may be a very baby step to the next phase. But I feel like we could have a lot more information about that. People are still really focused on trying to make the war impossible, and I think that that's really important. But if people are looking to what we can do next if this war ends up being inevitable, I think that that's, you know, one thing that could be done.
Just, like, on that front, why wait for the bombs to drop? We already know on the first day there's going to be 3,000. Mm-hmm. That's a lot of people that are going to die, and should we be waiting for them to die to take action?
There is a mass civil disobedience planned in Washington on Monday. And I know there's a lot of interfaith work on that, and, you know, they're calling people from all over, so I hope there's some successes there. And I'm surprised that the Vandenberg Action people haven't been, I mean, I know they have something planned on the Saturday after, but you know, from what they say, I don't know if this is kind of to lure people into joining, you know, but they say that it's incredibly easy to disrupt testing and, you know, activities there, because there's so much backlot and they can't do anything, you know, when there's civilians there. So, you know.
Yeah, I think the scare tactic on that front is the front page of the Santa Barbara News Press yesterday reported that Vandenberg officials were citing policy that they would shoot to kill. It was front page, in case you guys didn't see that. If
really
necessary, they would shoot to kill trespassers and people interfering or occupying any of the military lands.
But, you know, really, one of the, I think the biggest question, there's a great guy in Chicago named Brad Little, and he's a brilliant nonviolence theorist and organized the San Francisco to Moscow march and Quebec to Guantanamo march. And a few months ago, I spoke with him, and he reminded me and the group of other teachers that were there in Chicago that really the biggest choice that we have as human beings is whether we want to inflict suffering or endure suffering. And, you know, it's a big question. I mean, do you go into Vandenberg knowing that you might get shot? Do you speak up knowing that you might get put in jail? Do you, you know, just sit back? You know, at what level are you willing to risk? And I think that that really is the ultimate question, whether you're willing to inflict suffering or endure suffering.
I'd rather die standing up than live a life on your knees.
Yeah, I think Chomsky also says we know what will happen if no one does, if no one does anything. I think the scary, you know, possibility is that if we do act, something good may occur. So,
yeah, just like if we can't stop the war abroad until it's brought home, like we need to feel that something bad is happening in this world, and if people like are getting shot at Vandenberg, that's gonna provide sort of that fear that might make people realize what they're doing. It's